When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
What up, and happy holidays. It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today is one of the best three-point shooters of all time, now certainly one of the best NBA analysts and NBA podcasters out there. He is JJ Redick. We covered a whole bunch of stuff, including the sudden onslaught. It's an onslaught of parody in the league. Covered all that. The Lakers' quandary over whether to make a major trade and my belief that they are wasting LeBron's last best years. You can check out the story I wrote about that earlier this week on SI.com. Also talked about JJ's retirement, his podcasting career, that transition. And most importantly, he gave me a great recommendation for the best new burger joint in Brooklyn. So don't miss that, fellow Brooklynites. Before we get to all that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. This episode will also be on YouTube. If you'd like to see our shining faces, just go to the Sports Illustrated channel on YouTube, and you can find us there. And as always, if you've got any feedback for me, please hit me on Twitter, at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with JJ Redick is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now pleased to be joined by one of the best NBA analysts in the business, host of the Old Man and the Three Pod. Also, low-key, a foremost authority on the best pizza in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. JJ Redick here, courtesy today of DraftKings. JJ, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, by the way? Everything good?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thank you. You know, we got a chance to bump into each other briefly in a Barclays Center corridor about a month or so ago. Good to see you again. Do you have any new pizza recommendations for me? Because the last time you were the one who basically told me that one of the best pizza joints in Brooklyn was coming to my neighborhood. I was already a little bit up the block. They were opening a second one. And you actually... because we randomly bumped into each other in Brooklyn. You told me exactly where this pizza place was coming. It's been spectacular, of course. It's outgrowth of Lucali, famous Lucali. Anywhere else I need to go in my own neighborhood that I don't know about that you do?
You know, I don't have any pizza recs. It's funny. I've had this weird relationship with going out to eat since COVID. I think I just got out of the habit of... I was a psycho about restaurants and food and the food scene in any city that I've lived in. And after COVID, I just got out of that habit. And so I've tried a couple of new places. There's actually a great spot in Brooklyn Heights called Ingus Bar.
Okay.
It's on Hicks or Henry Street. It's down sort of by the BQE, but I'm a burger fanatic, and it's easily one of the best burgers in the city and a great vibe. It's like old school, swanky, dark wood. It's a cool spot. Ingus Bar.
Excellent. All right. Now I know where I'm going with your ESPN colleague, June Lee, who covers baseball for ESPN. We've been doing an informal kind of burger tour every time we get together, but it's always been in Manhattan. I'll get June back out to Brooklyn. We'll go yes. to Ingus. Perfect.
Love that.
Thank you for the rec. So speaking of when we bumped into each other randomly on a street in Brooklyn, at that time, I recall, like, you were, that was when you realized like you might not be able to continue playing?
Yeah, I appreciate you not leaking information, Howard. You know,
I held on to this for like 18 months.
I gave you some proprietary information that day. That was well before me sort of making a decision about my future. But yeah, I mean, the retirement thing was hard because I am so in love with the game of basketball and I'm so grateful for everything that has given me. And what I've realized, one of the most important things it gave me was friendships and relationships. And that's what I miss the most. And I miss that. I miss competing. And so the process of letting go of all of that, it's one thing to have the desire. I want to spend more time with my family. I want to see my kids grow up. I want to not be working on Christmas, but of course I'm working on Christmas this year. It's unavoidable. Luckily that, you know, we're in New York and I'm working the Knicks Philly game. I'm so excited. And the whole family's coming to the game. It's one thing to have that desire. It's another thing entirely to actually go through the process of letting go of something that's such a big part of your identity and your life. And that was really hard. That was really hard.
I'm sure it was. I know that there's this, you know, like nobody goes to go out on their own terms, right? We use this cliche. Well, you didn't get to go out. Almost nobody does. Was that the thing that you kind of had to overcome on some part? Because this was an injury thing, right? Where you literally just could not get out there anymore, as I recall. And it was kind of pushed you into this place.
Yeah. If I had won a championship, it would have been a much easier decision and a much easier internal monologue and process of saying I'm ready to hang it up and be done. So that factored into the process, the decision making as well. But yeah, my injury, I mean, I still haven't had surgery and I still can't really do very much anything that's active. I get to walk around a golf course. I can do that. But you know, last year I played a couple tennis, did a couple tennis clinics, in Brooklyn and couldn't walk for 3 days. And that was, you know, an hour of hitting balls. But again, I look at this, I can function, you know, I need to shave my heel bone. I have an overgrown heel bone that's caused some tearing in my Achilles. I got to clean up my Achilles. I got to clean out the bursa sac that's in between those two things. So at some point I'll probably get it. It's just a matter of, I don't really feel like being in a boot for 4 months and going through a grueling rehab process. You know, so, I'll get it done eventually.
Yeah. I don't blame you. How do you fill the competitive void there? Like, are you crushing your kids in Uno or like, where's the competitive stuff go?
I channel it in a couple different ways. I golf has been, has filled a part of my soul that I didn't expect. And I had dabbled in golf, but I'd gone years without playing. And as I was approaching my last year, I decided maybe golf can be the thing. And that to me is like the ultimate competitive thing because of your handicap and the course conditions. And if you get a match going, maybe a little action on the match, like I get some juice from that. And then the second career that to me, there's not a tangible result at the end of the day, but there's certain ways to sort of channel that competitiveness. And part of it is the podcast and building out an audience and a community. And DraftKings has been such a great partner with us this year. It's become sort of an extension of the community that we already had in place over the last 2 years. And then with the ESPN stuff, I get that performance anxiety from calling games. You're down on the court. You're next to the players. Some of them, you know, come over and say hi before the game, or one of them kept talking to me the whole time. It was bizarre, like in the middle of the game. I'm like, dude, I got headsets on. I can't hear you what you're saying to me. I did Taylor Rooks' show last week and I explained to her the feeling, Howard, of going on the road in the playoffs in a close game in a hostile environment and making big plays down the stretch and getting a win and then getting back to the locker room with your teammates and the coaching staff and the training staff and the buzz and the energy of that. It is a drug. it is addictive, and it's something that I don't know that I'll ever be able to capture again. That's why I'm so grateful that I got to experience it so many times in the 30 years that I got to play competitive basketball.
I want to get back to some of that because I'm really fascinated just about, you know, the transition to your career. And obviously it wasn't much of a transition in some ways because you were doing the podcast for the last several years of your career. So you were, you know, you had some momentum going before you retired. I want to hit a couple quick NBA things for a minute here, because as you and I sit here on December 22nd, we have, I think in my 26th season covering this league somehow, I don't think I've seen parity like this. I don't know that you ever saw what during your time in the game or as a fan, this kind of parity. Four games are separating number one from number 10 in the West right now. The East is a little bit more stratified, but still, like, it's nine teams are 500 or higher. The Raptors are 10th, but they're four games out of sixth. Orlando's nine games under 500, but feels like a 500 team right now somehow. Like, they're really competitive. The same with the Thunder. Like, those, I feel like those are the two analogs for each other in the two conferences. What the hell is going on? Why do you think there's all this parity? I wrote about this a couple weeks ago and I got a lot of people with a lot of theories, but what's your feeling about why we're having so much parity in the league right now? And is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a great thing. I would start with the talent level in the NBA. I would start there, because I was thinking about this even with the Christmas Day games. Like, you mentioned DraftKings. The guys with the five best odds of winning MVP right now, they're all playing on Christmas Day. You know who else is playing on Christmas Day? LeBron James, Ja Morant. We were supposed to get Steph Curry as well. He's not in the top five for odds on DraftKings. So, like, we've got there's a five games. At a typical day, we have 10 to 12 games. Think about that. Yes. We don't have Zion Williamson playing on Christmas. We don't have Trae Young. Like, the amount of talent in the league, the amount of players that you can legitimately say are franchise players, I think it's as healthy as it's ever been in terms of the talent level. Some of it, to me, is the luxury tax and teams having to make hard decisions. And because of the supermax contracts now, once a team signs a guy to that, your roster flexibility gets much lower. And so that creates parity. You're able to build out teams now in a better way. And then the third thing, there's a lot of smart teams. There's a lot of smart teams, and a lot of smart teams have drafted really well. The draft is always going to be a crapshoot. You can never sort of scientifically predict what's going to happen, because we're human beings, and you don't know if a guy is going to get injured early in his career. You don't know how he's going to react to signing a max contract. You don't know if you don't have the proper player development in place, you don't have the proper coach in place, you don't have the proper fit, the pieces around him. You don't know. But I think there's teams that have done it really well. Memphis Grizzlies, for example, have drafted really well. Yes, they hit on Ja Morant. They hit on Jaren Jackson Jr. But think about the guys that they have drafted later in the draft. Dylan Brooks, Brandon Clark, Desmond Bane, who's now looks like a second star in Memphis. So I think that's some of it. I don't think there's one thing, Howard, why there's so much parity. But I think those are all – that's part of the conversation. Surely there's things I'm leaving out. There's people smarter than me that can probably point to other factors as well.
I agree with all of that. And those, you hit at least a couple of the factors that other people around the league had kind of suggested to me, including just the fact that, as you say, like, the talent level is just higher now and guys are coming in. A lot of them just ready to play. And you look at even this rookie class, the last couple rookie classes. It used to be that you could not make an impact on winning as a rookie in this league for a long time. I mean, some did, obviously, but
the generational players did. The generational, yes, players,
exactly, yeah. But not the role guys, right? Like, not the, you know, the Benedict Mathurins coming in or something, right? Like, a little lower
in
the lottery.
David Roddy from Memphis,
right?
Aldama from Memphis. Like, these guys.
Has Memphis missed on a single pick?
Shout out to Zach Kleiman. Jeez, for man. Sure. The guy you know, avoids any press or publicity. And he just goes about that, that whole front office just goes about and does their job really well.
You could survey 1,000 NBA fans, and unless they lived in Memphis, and even those folks probably could not pick Zach Kleiman out of a lineup on Twitter or on the internet. Zach's surely not on there.
Your point, though, Howard, it's such a great point about the young talent and their impact on winning. You brought up the Magic. I'll mention the Houston Rockets as well. Objectively speaking, neither of these teams are very good. But if you look at some of the wins that they have, why is that? Because they have talented young players. Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr., Şengün, like the Magic now finally are starting to hit on some draft picks. Paolo Banchero, at the time, no one thought he was going number one. He's a stud, man. He looks like a guy that's going to give you 25-8-5 for the next 12 to 15 years.
I'm just glad we got 12 minutes into the podcast before you went straight to the Duke promotion. So that's that's good. And it was completely natural segue too.
Like brotherhood, baby. The brotherhood.
That's a real thing, isn't it?
Like, yeah, it is. People ask about it all the time. What makes the Duke brotherhood unique? And there's other schools that have had this. We had one guy for 40 plus years. We all had a shared experience because we played for that guy. We played for Coach. And when I played there, after I played there, even now, it's very easy to forge a relationship and a bond with guys that you didn't overlap with. Mike Dunleavy is one of my closest friends. We played 2 months together in Milwaukee. We were already close friends way before that. You know, some of the older guys, Quinn Snyder, Jay Billis, like these are guys I talk to on a regular basis. So I think the key thing there is there was one guy there, and we all had that shared experience of playing for a legend.
Yeah. One more quick NBA thing. You did mention LeBron and playing on Christmas, and the Lakers obviously are in a really bad state. You and I talked about this a little bit when we bumped into each other some weeks ago. I just wrote about the Lakers earlier this week, so I'm going to plug my own stuff again in asking this question. But I framed the story that I wrote this week about the idea that essentially the Lakers are wasting the final great years of LeBron. Like, you don't know which year is the last year for an all-time great, and he's already pushed the envelope way beyond what anybody else had done. No one's had a year 20 like this in the first place. And I think they need to be all in. And I said this, I've been very consistent on this, JJ, because the Lakers are probably not happy with me right now. But I said the same thing when he was in his final years in Cleveland. Like, I didn't think they should hold on to that Nets pick that they were saying, oh, this is the key to our future. Like, if you have LeBron James, if you have Steph Curry, and I'll apply the same thing to them too. Like, I thought they should have traded those guys before they became the players that they became. Nothing against, you know, their young guys. I think that when you have one of those guys, you are obligated. You have a responsibility to surround them with the best possible talent for every year that they are still performing at an elite level. I think LeBron still is. There's some other stuff going on now injury-wise that you just can't do anything about. But I don't believe they should be holding on to those picks as if they're the key to the future, because you have LeBron right now. Where do you stand on kind of that conundrum, I guess?
It's a great question, a great thought. I'll actually go read what you wrote, because I'm curious to hear your sort of takes and thoughts in depth about it. The Lakers are a team I've had to talk a lot about because we do it all the time on First Take. It comes up on the podcast. I don't want to be too harsh here, but I will be. I mentioned there's a lot of smart teams and how they're running their franchises. To me, what the Lakers have done since 2020 hasn't made any sense. There was a formula there. You had LeBron, you had AD, and you put around them older vets that were smart players, like a Rondo, a Dwight Howard, young wings that could defend and shoot threes. Danny Green, obviously, later in his career, they opted not to bring him back. He ended up signing a free agent deal. but they had KCP, they had Kyle Kuzma. Now there's rumors bringing Kuzma back. The next year, they go super young with their ancillary pieces. That doesn't work. They lose to the Phoenix Suns, even though Chris Paul can't shoot a jump shot because his shoulder's messed up. Then they trade for Russell Westbrook. And anybody who has watched basketball knows that that's not going to be a good fit for Russ. That's not going to be a good fit for Bron. We saw in Miami how they built around LeBron. We saw in Cleveland how they built around LeBron. And then we saw in LA them do it right and how they built around LeBron. And then all of a sudden they veer off that course and they get into a situation where they're stuck. They're stuck. And Russ is obviously going to be up after this year. Who knows what will happen if they do end up making any trades. But I just don't like how they've built that team around LeBron and AD over the last 2 years. It hasn't really made any sense to me, given that they had a blueprint in 2020 and they were a great basketball team that year. Yeah, everybody kind of knocks the bubble. Like, they were awesome that year. I played against them. They were awesome. Before COVID hit, they were awesome. They were an awesome team. So I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Danny Green said the same thing on this podcast earlier this season. Basically, like, you know, we knew what we had. And it was the right formula around LeBron. And everybody kind of knows that by now. I'll be curious to see what they do. But yeah, to me, holding on to those picks for what? You know, you're not, you know, you don't know when you're getting another opportunity like this. And those picks are not necessarily going to, you know, when's the last time? I mean, it's been since Kobe in 96, and he was obviously a pick they traded for. But they haven't been built around a superstar that they drafted in a very long time.
I think it's very hard now to operate your team in a way that your priorities are trades and free agency. I talked about this last year, late in the playoffs. If you looked at the teams that were playing late in the playoffs, Boston, Phoenix, Dallas, Golden State, of course, Miami, like, they all had drafted well. Yeah. It's homegrown talent. And again, 2020 is an anomaly there. It's an anomaly. I'll admit it. It doesn't hold weighed against my argument here, but the big three in Boston had a homegrown talent in Paul Pierce. The big three in Miami had a homegrown talent in Dwayne Wade. The big three in Cleveland did with Kyrie Irving. Like, you have to be able to draft well, and there's teams that just haven't done that.
Yeah. A couple quick ones before I get you out of here. So the podcast, you obviously get amazing guests. Doesn't hurt that these were your former peers, teammates, everything else. You've had Steph Curry recently, Donovan Mitchell, Bradley Beal, obviously the great interview with Ben Simmons before training camp. You clearly have an advantage over us media lifers, us ink-stained wretches on some level. But no, like, what I'm always impressed about, JJ, flatter you just blatantly for a minute here. You guys, you and Tommy, are so incredibly prepared for these things. Like, you're not just like having your buddies on to let's just shoot the shit for a while. Like, it's clear you guys have done a lot of homework first. That makes sense to me because I used to see your pregame routine before games, and you had this like obsessive pregame routine. So I imagine it's all the same thing you're channeling into the podcast. But there, the disadvantage, or the unfair advantage that I will say as a lifetime media member, it's very clear to me that you're going to get better responses from them, even if it was the exact same question asked the exact same way. And I'm just curious, like, how kind of attuned to that you are, realizing that, like, you have a credibility that I can't possibly have sitting in front of the same microphone. And I don't begrudge it at all because I love listening to your podcast. And again, you guys do a great job. But can you sense that guys are just more at ease because they know that with whatever they're saying to you, you understand it on a level that I can't possibly?
Yes, I feel that. And I agree with sort of all the thoughts and points that you just made. There is a comfort level. There's a inherent shared mutual respect And that's not to say that players don't respect the media and the media doesn't respect players, traditional media. I'm lumping you in with everybody else. Sorry for a second. That's not to say that there's guys that complain about, I was never like, oh, the media is out to get me. No, it's like, anything that the media ever wrote bad about me, I brought it upon myself. You're going to write bad about me because I played a shitty game. Yeah, I played a shitty game. Like, I brought that on myself. If I messed up off the court and you wrote something about it. Yeah, I messed up. Like, I'll own it. I never had that sort of sense of, someone being out to get me. I don't know what the secret sauce of the show is. It's hard for me. I think my agenda is always the same with the show. The agenda is I'm having a player on that either I like because he's my friend or I like him as a player. I wouldn't have a guy on the show that I wasn't a fan of already. And my hope with each guy we have on the show is that if you weren't a fan and you listened to the show or watched the show on YouTube, you would come away and say, you know what? Like, I thought a certain way about Patrick Beverley, but I like him. I thought a certain way about Ben Simmons, but, you know, he's not so bad. Like, we talk about it all the time. It's just the humanization of it, of athletes. It's like, there's storytelling, and hopefully there's a little bit of humor, and hopefully there's a little bit of truth and a little bit of letting your guard down. But yeah, I know I have an advantage. I'm sorry, Howard. I know.
It's all right. Just the reality
I can make the call, and I don't always book the guests. You know, we kind of team up on that, and Kylie, who runs our company, does a great job, and does a lot of the booking element of it. But I know, like, you know, I can sit there and be like, at any point in time, if I don't have a guest for a week, we've got like four correspondents. I can call Mikel, I can call Tyrese, I can call Alex Caruso and be like, hey, I need you to jump on for 45 minutes. Like, that's pretty cool. And we're very grateful for everybody that comes on the show.
I have that same thing, but it's Sam Amick and Vinny Goodwill. So, you know,
I know how you guys do it. I see it.
The Ben Simmons one was amazing, though, because he is so closed off with the media, more so than the average player, right? Like, he is impenetrable, I feel like. And for his whole career, and you played with him, you got to know him on a different level. But that was the one where I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm hearing the real Ben Simmons literally for the first time when I listened to him on your podcast. And then it was literally like 3 days later at Media Day in Brooklyn, which I attended, and it was back to just boom, three word answers. He's stone faced. I'm like, God damn it. Like, I thought, like, maybe this is the moment where we get a little bit more of the humanity of Ben Simmons. And it was nope. Right back to it. But
look, I think Ben is a little bit, I was around him for 2 years, and we're obviously still friends. He's a little bit introverted, and I have this weird balance of introversion, extroversion, depending on my mood. But I was naturally growing up very, very introverted. And I get Ben. The funny thing about that interview was some of the responses, and it is largely Philadelphia sports fans. And I never fault Philly sports fans. I love their craziness. but they're, you know, I let them off the hook. And I'm like, what question, Howard, did I not ask Ben? Was there a single controversial thing that ever happened that I did not ask him about? Did people want me to grill my friend like it was Frost Nixon? Like, what are we? It's a podcast about basketball. Like, it's a podcast about basketball. The guy has clearly gone through some shit over the last year. Like, I'm not going to try to make this guy look bad. And, like, I'm not a journalist either. Like, it's like, what?
You hit all the main things. And yes, were there moments there where because my journalist brain kicks in immediately, yeah, like, oh, ask him this or I'll follow up with this. No, yeah, you don't. And even when I have people on this podcast, I'm not looking to grill somebody. Like, the podcast is, for me, this is part journalism, part entertainment. It's a little lighter. It's not quite the same as if I'm doing some in-depth story where I'm going to, you know, say, oh, but hold on, but wait a minute. You know, and I didn't, yeah, I don't listen to your podcast expecting that, even if in my own head I was like, oh, yeah, go a little further. Oh, he veered, shit. But I mean, I get that.
There are times, and I'm not going to name the time. There are times when I feel like it's necessary and the guest is comfortable enough that we can do the follow-up question. And, but again, I think specifically that Ben thing, Ben had not really spoken and said anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, him and his sister had reached out to us and said, you know, Ben really wants to do the show before the season. We said, great. We had no idea when we agreed to do it in July that it was going to end up being like right before training camp. But I felt like as a human, it was like my responsibility to ask the question.
Yeah.
But then just give him the respect of saying he's going to answer it however he wants to answer it, whatever his truth is, whatever his thoughts are and opinions are. That's his opinion. That's what he's been waiting to say. And if he doesn't want to go any further, that's not on me. Like I'm giving him the platform. It's the same thing we do on every show. I'm giving you the platform. You can do 3-word answers if you want. I'll talk the whole podcast. It's fine. But I actually, that was one of the Steph one that we did recently, the Ben one. Those are two of the most fun episodes, I think, that I've done.
As a listener, I would agree. Those are the two of the most that I enjoyed the most, in large part because of how much they said that I had not heard before. Steph talks all the time, but Steph, I felt like, gave you guys kind of a different insight and version of things. Who's your white whale guest? Like, you, it feels like you could get almost anybody, and it's obviously there's probably some limits there, but like, who's the one guest you either haven't been able to get, or maybe you haven't asked yet, but like, who's the white whale, the ideal?
I would say for basketball, there was three, and Steph was one of them. So I've got to kind of now get a third one, and I'll put Devin Booker now in that category. I'm totally fascinated by him, and he's someone who largely avoids doing a ton of press. Now, he'll talk about his car collection. He'll talk about, he did his 80 Architectural Digest home tour. He does all that. Yeah. But LeBron for sure. And him and I have discussed him coming on the show. I hope it happens someday. And then I actually, it's funny because how many basketball podcasts have great Larry Bird stories? I mean, we had GP on, Gary Payton on last year, and he told some stories. I was watching Knucklehead's podcast the other day on YouTube, and James Worthy had some Larry Bird stories. And I'm like, you know, it'd be great to have on the show is Larry Bird himself.
For sure.
I think hopefully we get LeBron. I'm not hopeful that we get Larry Bird. I just know I would love to have Larry Bird on the show.
Bird's been pretty reclusive since, even when he was with the Pacers, but especially since he retired. He's hard to track down.
Yeah.
JJ, I know you got more commitments to get to, so I appreciate you spending the time. Again, JJ here, courtesy of DraftKings. JJ, thank you for the restaurant recommendations, the pizza recommendations, everything else. Thanks for spending the time.
Always good to see you, Howard. We'll talk soon. All right. Later.
Take care. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to JJ Redick. Thanks to PR ace Sammy Steinlight for facilitating. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Enjoy the holidays, everybody. See you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.